Man. Well, catch me up. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good, but it's our show, so be asking the questions.
Oh, you get to ask the questions. I was flipping it around on you. See how that works?
Doesn't work. Right. Doesn't. No, you don't get to play that game.
Guy's used to hosting shows. Jamie's used to running shows. This is going to be fun.
More combative, one or the other.
Mwahaha. We'll see how it plays out, right?
So, I mean, we've known each other for a while, but, you know, our listeners, this is the first time that you've been on our show. So why don't you give us a brief rundown? What's your name?
My name's Jamie Newberry, at Jamie on Twitter, if you want to know. What do I do? So I think I'm known in the iOS world as a designer. However, I recently accepted a role as COO of Martiancraft.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them. So they're a little app dev shop. And distributed, remote team, cool people. I've worked with them for about 8 months before accepting the role. And yeah, it's been really cool working with them. And it's I'm super excited about taking this role on. So yeah, I guess that's kind of a summary of where, you know, where I am and who I am.
So, okay, I want to get to that because that's pretty fascinating. But I mean, so you've been around for a while in the industry, and I think you have a pretty interesting story about how you kind of came up to be, you know, where you are now as of last week.
The basically. Jamie.
Well, interesting. An interesting story is a relative term, but I don't know. I have a story for sure. For sure. You want me to dig into that story?
Yeah that's what we're all about. Yeah.
All right. So, all right. If I get too long-winded, though, you guys really feel free to just, you know, interject. So
the show never goes over 8 hours. So
I'll go back in time. So yeah, I have been around a while, not just in our industry, but I've been around on Earth for a while. So let me go back in time to college for me. I graduated with a metal sculpture degree. And upon graduating, I realized I needed to make a living. I had taken a job at a small film and video production shop in Burlingame, California, which is near San Francisco. And I was doing production assistant work. I had worked through my way through college doing freelance film and video production work. My husband at the time, I was married, he was into video production and stuff like that. So he had gotten me the gig. It helped us pay our way through school. We had no debt, you know, that whole thing. We moved to the San Francisco Bay Area. We worked with this small film and video company, both of us. I was at like 30 hours a week, and I had a lot of downtime. They did big events and stuff. So they did specialty camera equipment for huge events like the Olympics and Pan Am Games and stuff like that. So I was an assistant to the production manager who coordinated those events. Her significant other was the specialty camera guy. And then my husband would help him like as a PA and grip, and I would help her as a production assistant. So I got really great experience coordinating events and being organized and learning how to, you know, crew productions and stuff like that. It was great experience, but I had a lot of downtime. When they would go out on these events, I would stay back at the office and kind of hold the fort down, collect the mail, answer the phones, do stuff like that. So I taught myself how to code websites. So that was kind of a long way of getting there, but I was fascinated with
websites. Was that part of the job? Like, were you like told to, hey, go make a website for us, or you just did it?
No, they didn't have a website, and I was fascinated by it. So, like, just to give some perspective, it was like 1998, and so I had this downtime. I was really, you know, I was an art student, a metal sculptor, and I had just heard about Photoshop, like, before I graduated, and I had kind of messed around with it. I'd heard about, you know, the internet and web and stuff like that. It was really new to me. I was a kid in Vegas, basically, you know, like in the desert. I didn't grow up with computers like a lot of folks. Like, we had an Atari. We had some like Radio Shack computer when we grew up, where you type in lines of code and make like a line animate on screen. Like, that was kind of the extent of my computer experience growing up. And in college, my boyfriend, who became my husband, he was way more into computers. And that I really have to credit him for a lot of my computer experience, because he was in at UNR, and I had gone to school in Cedar City, Utah. And he was like, do they have email there? Can you go to the computer lab and ask them if they have email? And I went, and the computer lab assistant asked, like, he looked at me like I had asked if they had aliens in the closet. Like, they never heard of email. And, you know, again, like 1998, Is that one? No, that wasn't 1998. That was like 1993. So that was way before, right after I graduated high school. So I'm totally dating myself. I'm 40 years old, if anybody's wondering. You don't have to math it.
Youngest person on this call.
Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Shut up. I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. But not that it matters.
Renee is the prettiest, but you're definitely.
That's right. I'll give him that. All right. So I'm jumping all over the place here. So that was way back. And then kind of working my way through college, metal sculpture, production, film and video production stuff. I did their website. Like I was fascinated with it because I had kind of, you know, learned a few things while I was at college. We had to use computers to type papers and stuff like that. But it was always a computer lab or whatever in school. And so I, you know, kind of dabbled in stuff. I'd seen animated GIFs, and yes, I say GIF. You know, so I'd seen these things out there in the world, and I was fascinated by them, and I wanted to learn more. So I had a lot of downtime, and that's what I did with my downtime. I was still technically working, but they didn't have work for me to do, so I kept myself busy. You know, I would do, like, view source, and then I used BB Edit, and I would copy and paste stuff, and then I'd use Photoshop, trying to learn how to use Photoshop. I'd make graphics and plug them into the, you know, like, okay, I'm going to make a folder, and anyway, and see what would happen. And I learned how to make websites, and I made this company first website by doing
that's work. You're accruing value for the company by actually learning things. I totally support that as work. Yeah, especially if you've got no direction. What are you going to do? Well, Sudoku all the time? Like
exactly. Yeah. Like no. And I used to mail a lot. I had a thing called Grandma Monday. I would mail my grandma a letter every Monday. I'd write. And so I did that too during work.
Better person than I am.
but yeah, Grandma Mondays and learning how to code websites when I was not doing other production stuff. So I learned that when we got their website done, some of their clients were like, whoa, who made your website? And they were like, Jamie did. And then their you know, clients were like, hey, you should make a logo for us. You should make a website for us. And so I just started doing this stuff in downtime, and it grew and grew kind of. And we reached a point, this company was like, so, hey, we would love to, you know, expand your role into like a full-time office manager, but we really don't need any, you know, like graphic designer. Like that's not a role we really want to support. And they were so awesome about it. Like, but, you know, they were like, we can give you more in this capacity or not more in this capacity. And I made the decision to leave. And, you know, I followed my heart. I didn't have something else lined out. I didn't know what I was going to do. But
is that difficult? Because, I mean, your husband was there at the time, I'm assuming. And it seems like it was a small company that you were pretty close with. So it was sort of setting your sail down this path of being a designer. A difficult choice?
Well, so it was scary in terms of we lived in San Francisco Bay Area, you know, the prices out there.
Yeah. Even back in, well.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
This is just before the collapse, right? So '99 kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. '98, '99. So I did leave there in '99 and I ended up. So, like, yeah, there was, like, this three-month period of time where I had no work, so I took temp work. I ended up answering phones in, like, the financial district at some bank, and people were horribly cruel when you're the desk girl, right? People are just like, ugh, you're worthless, basically. So that was a fun experience.
I've never understood that. The person that answers the phone is in no – they have no power.
You know, it's
like, – and don't be a jerk to them. Like,
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I mean, I got that a lot when I worked, you know, I was working the office desk or whatever at the production company too. And I had, you know, there were people who come in occasionally like, oh, that girl or whatever. I don't understand that either, but people
I understand you're frustrated, but I mean, you can't just yell at the first person that you see. Like, it's not.
They might be in charge of the Star Wars franchise one day. You never know.
Well, it's not even about being angry. Sometimes it's just demeaning, like they're above you. It's not even that they're angry most of the time.
It's also just not going to get you problem solved any quicker.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's a weird mindset in my perspective. But so there's that. I did that attempt financial district all the while. So that was a temp job. All the while I was teaching myself how to use Photoshop and I was making a portfolio for myself so I could get a graphic design job. And I worked this sort of like a job. I'd do my temp work in the day and then I would come home. I would do my lessons. I was doing, I think it was like Classroom in a Book, something like that. Adobe had put out these Classroom in a Book, came with a CD-ROM with lessons. And we had a, oh man, it was a Mac G3, I think, at the time, had just come out.
Nice.
And it was still beige.
Beige, you know? Yeah.
And
that was my first Mac.
Yeah, so that was, I think that was our first Mac as a married couple in a tiny studio apartment. And
did it have like the little green handle that you could pop and like the side would fall off?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Anyway.
I'm
going deep on Mac nerdery right now. But anyway, let's continue with the story.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I'd do that. I would look on, like, job boards. I'd apply for jobs. I had a little spreadsheet. It was very organized about what jobs I'd applied for. And then I'd follow up. If I didn't hear anything, I'd cross them off the list. And I did this for, like, 3 months. And then I started to get, like job interviews. And I got this interview with a .com called Knowledge First, and I ended up getting an offer, which at the time, so, you know, look at like where I'd been making $10 an hour, 30 hours a week at the film and video company. And then like, I think I got $11 an hour at the temp job in the financial district. And then I get this job for like I got this job offer from this. They wanted me to be a production designer, which was awesome. For a startup called Knowledge First, the solution to financing higher education, which awesome. I thought was fantastic. And they offered me like $40,000 a year, 10,000 shares of stock, health benefits. And we were just like, we just hit the jackpot. This is a miracle. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And really, it was great. And so I took the job. And I was there until 2001, so 99 through 2001. And it was great. I mean, it was like the peak of the .com boom. We had, you know, the Aeron chairs and the, you know, all of the like crazy startup parties and complete excess. And then all the layoffs, round after round of layoffs. And I didn't get laid off. I ended up leaving. I saw like our neighbors in our little startup. So we were based in Foster City, California, our startup was. And when our neighbor was Webvan, which was grocery delivery in 1999, mm-hmm. which was super cool.
I recall it.
And I remember them like, we were like, oh, Webvan's going to make it. They were doing great. It was a brilliant idea. And when they closed their doors, I started looking for jobs because I was like, if Span can't make it, there's no way we're making it.
Yeah. Well, it was like the pets.com sort of era, right?
Broadcast.com worked out okay, but not so many others.
Well, I mean, Amazon came out of that. Yep. So, you know, they weren't all bad ideas.
Yeah, Amazon actually started when I was still in college. I remember buying my books my last 2 years of college through Amazon.com, crazy enough as it is. And I got a free coffee cup, which I kept for years from Amazon as a thank you gift, which I think is cool.
Seattle has like drowned the world in coffee at this point.
See, I never made that connection. I just thought it was the coolest gift ever that I'd received for buying. Yeah,
that is pretty cool.
They don't do that anymore.
No.
But, oh man, where are we now? Oh boy. So .com.
Yeah.
I ended up applying for jobs.
So about 2001-ish.
Yeah. Early 2001, I met with UNLV and I met with a small startup out in Austin. I ended up getting offers with both of them. I took the one in Las Vegas, which took me back home, basically. Mm-hmm.
Is it because you wanted to go home?
A little bit. And I didn't really know why. I mean, I'm close with my family, but they live like I grew up about 3 hours north of Las Vegas, mm-hmm. In a really small town, graduating class, high school class, 38 students.
Wow.
So really small, very rural, rural.
What town. All I know about Las Vegas is that it is not the Strip.
Yeah. Like there's other stuff.
Yes. Like the people that actually live there. Are very
outside of Wynn, there's other stuff.
Who knew? Wow. Yeah, the people have asked me, like, where do you live there? Like, where do people live? Like, I live, like, 45 minutes away from the near
it's like
mountains.
Real city. There's, like, stuff there, you know?
Yeah.
I saw the TV show. I know people get arrested in the outskirts.
That's right. That's all that happens here. You either go to the Strip and you're a tourist or you get arrested on the outskirts.
Yeah.
That's it.
TV never lies.
Oh, Renee. We need to do like an Un-Vegas or something.
So like the opposite of CES.
That's it. Yeah. The opposite. Un-Vegas conference. Let's do that.
Awesome.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I moved.
So you went back to Vegas and?
Vegas. I ended up taking a web design position at UNLV. So it was me and my boss, the woman who hired me, over managing 11,000 pages of just chaos. And what was great is all the stuff that I'd done in the Bay Area. I got to work with like the Nelson Norman group when I was out there, Don Norman and Jacob Nelson. I had gotten to do some intern stuff with them.
There was big in advertising, I should say, right?
Yeah. I mean, the usability. I mean, Don Norman's the guy who coined the term user experience. Mm-hmm. And, it was cool. Like, I learned all about information architecture, and I learned all about, like, all of these things about how to think about the user and the content. And so when I went to UNLV, I was like, we need to reorganize things from like a content perspective. And so I just spent all this time, and then I led a redesign, and I got to tell you, like coming to a university in Las Vegas after being in the .com startup, like where you're working literally 16-hour days, 7 days a week at least, it was like running into a brick wall at like 1,000 miles an hour. It was so slow. So I was just like, I need more work. So I was like going to different departments. Can I redesign your website? And like nobody wanted to, like, no, we're not ready. The university just moved so slowly. And a cool thing that the university had, at least when I was there, was that you could allow like 60 or 70% of your time doing side projects as long as it contributed to the growth of the position you had. So freelance.
That's pretty cool. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I was doing tons of freelance, and that's actually freelance work is how I ended up getting my very first PowerBook. I got the Titanium PowerBook in exchange for my very first Flash website. So,
well, A, good choice. B, what? You're like on the university dime and they let you do side work?
Well, I did a lot of it after hours, if I had downtime, hell yeah, I worked on it, and it did make
that's
me better.
That's a great deal.
So yeah, it was a good deal. But then I ended up teaching at the university too, which was great.
Awesome.
And
that explains it because I've seen you speak, and you're very comfortable and confident in front of a crowd. It's practice. You know?
Thank you. Yeah, I taught management information systems at UNLV.
I did not know that, and I'm surprised and unsurprised at the same time because you hold the attention of a room well.
Oh, well, management information systems is certainly boring. One-on-one. And so you get these students that have to be there. And then it was classrooms, like lecture style class. You get 60 students, and you have the gamut of like people who've never touched computers before and people who were born using computers. Mm-hmm. And I was like 28-year-old university teacher, not much older than a lot of my students. Some of my students were older, non-traditional students. So it was an interesting experience. I did that for 3 years. I taught while also working, and then I switched over to the art department. They found out I was teaching for management information systems, and they were like, what? Come teach for your art department. That's where you graduated. You should bring your skills here. So I put together an interface design class. Then I taught interface design and graphic design in the fine art department at UNLV for a couple semesters. Then I got pregnant. I left. And like a lot of stuff was happening in parallel. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like such a long story. Oh my gosh. Good job.
No, it's good. It's good. I don't want to pry into any personal stuff, but I mean, that's an interesting dynamic. Like I like that you went back to the art side of stuff, because that's where you started with the metalworking.
Yeah, that's where my heart kind of always was. And, mm-hmm. I was doing design work during the day. Like, that was my day job, was graphic design. And then I would be teaching, with management information systems. And when the art college, like, asked me to come do stuff over there, I was stoked. I was like, yes, this is where I belong. And I became great friends with the new director of sculpture and his wife. And, like, it was just cool. Okay. So I got, like, a key to the sculpture studio. I could go back weld
did
whenever
you ever I'm, use it like did you, yeah, would you did. Go, you'd go I in did. And like mess around
yeah I went and made a few tables like for my house. I just moved into the house, and so it was just like I made a couple like really gnarly kind of crufty tables, and they're awesome. I still have those. And Boy, what else? So yeah, so like I was doing web design as my day job. I was doing, interestingly, I had hired this company. There was a local company called Eat Drink. They were like the badass company in town. Like there weren't a lot of people doing really good Flash work, and Flash was cool. I'm going to say like we're in like 2003 now, right?
Yeah.
And Flash was cool. And I was, you know, I was teaching a lot of stuff and doing web design in the day, teaching management permissions and then graphic design and interface design. And then like The architecture, School of Architecture, needed the web design department to overhaul their website, but they needed something nice. Like the School of Architecture kind of stood apart. Like it's a like nice School of Architecture, and they already had a nicer website than UNLV had, but they needed to update it. They wanted to do like Flash sites. So I called this company Eat Drink. I'm like, can we outsource you? We had a budget to do this site. And then at the last minute, the project ended up falling through. But I had connected with this awesome company that I was like, oh, I wish I were cool enough to work at this company because they're awesome. It was like six dudes, you know, just like six guys, young, super talented.
Of course, it's six dudes.
Right? But yeah, cool. Yeah. Like, you know, and I'm not cool. Like, I'm not.
Oh, please.
I know, I'm just like sort of awkward. And so like to me, these guys were like cool. They were doing really cool work. You know, how have you ever been intimidated by the coolness of somebody's work? And you're just like, oh, my gosh, it's so cool. Anyway, if you have it,
that happened to me. No. Only when I see something I've done and I forgot that I did it.
That's amazing. Oh, God. To be you.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I've never been in that position. So. I have this conversation with these guys and I'm like, oh my gosh, they talked to me. The project fell through. And in closing, I was like, well, if you ever need an amazing interface designer or a project manager, let me know. Mm-hmm. And they were like, send us your resume. So I sent my resume and like within 15 minutes, we had a conversation going and I started doing some side work with them. So still full time at UNLV. And I took on some side work with this company, Eat Drink. They needed a project manager because the six dudes were great. Like one of them was kind of the business guy and the rest of them were like animators and, you know, and web makers and stuff and Flash guys. And so like,
that's really good. I admire your moxie. I can't do that. I really can't. Like joking aside, I don't put myself out there for work like that. I really don't. You know, so that's great of you that you were just like, hey, like.
If you ever need, you know, throw it out there, I guess. And I really didn't expect anything to come of it, but I did throw it out there. And they responded immediately. They were like, yes, we actually need a project manager is what we need. We need somebody who's good at interfacing with the clients so that our guys can focus on the work and somebody can talk to the clients like they're humans and keep stuff organized. And so I came in and I started on two projects on the side with them. And so that was like February 2004. And then by July, they were like, what would it take to get you to come work with us full time, to leave your job at UNLV and come work with us?
You said money.
Yeah, I was like, well, as chance would have it, I just found out I'm pregnant. So if that changes anything for you, like now's your chance to rescind your offer. And they were like, no problem. Like,
two of you, we've got two of you now.
Yeah, right. Like, I was like, so health benefits are important, you know? And yeah,
man, can they even? I don't even know if that's legal.
No, you know, but
I mean, what's legal and what actually happens are two different things, but
right. And you know, and I had thrown it out there, like, you know, it wasn't like I just was being upfront. Like, honestly, that was a thing that I don't know. I've just it's never crossed my mind. Like sometimes it never occurs to me like that my gender is different than anybody else's. Like it just
That is a hurdle that I would never have to face going into a job interview.
Right.
Well,
right?
It might be that like my wife or the person that I'm with is going to have a baby and that may affect my ability to work. But right. It's not the same thing as actually carrying a child like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like you're sick all the time. I don't know. My experience was that it was just ridiculously sick a lot. So I was like, yeah, meetings. I have to leave occasionally for, you know, during meetings and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly a luxury that I enjoy that. You know, in this case, he didn't have. So.
So, no, it was cool. They were completely cool with it. But I did throw
That's
it out.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, hey, if it, you know, I just want to be upfront with you. If it's a concern, like, now's your chance to, like, undo the offer. And they were like, no, like, we really love to have you. So I ended up accepting the job. And then, you know, so I kept my teaching gig for the next semester. So I I gave notice at UNLV. I started at Eat Drink in October of 2004. I was still teaching twice a week, Monday nights. The graphic design classes and interface design classes were like 3 hours twice a week. So it was like Tuesday and Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m., which I got to tell you, man, I was starting to feel it at that point. I guess like building a baby and doing all that other stuff was
like just in the old workshop, just building a baby.
That's right, construction time. So yeah, so that happened, and then you know I was doing so I made that my last semester of teaching that fall of 2004, and I focused on building a baby and then being a mom and working at this new job that I loved. I worked with amazing people. I should mention also Eat Drink was a two location office. We had office in Chicago as well, and that's where two of the owners were, and then there was one of the or partners, one partner left in the earth, I guess three at the time, anyway, whatever, doesn't matter. It was a split office. We had offices in Chicago, office in Las Vegas. There were six people in our Las Vegas office, including me, and then two when I started at Chicago, but it grew up to be about six or eight people over time. And it was so cool. And we did advertising work. You know, we worked with McDonald's and Disney and, I don't know, Procter & Gamble. And, like, we did big agency work. We really didn't have a lot of local Las Vegas clients.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about our sponsor, Automatic. Chances are your car hasn't fully kept up with technology. That's where Automatic comes in. It's a small adapter that turns any car into a connected car. Just plug Automatic into the same port that your mechanic uses to diagnose engine problems, and it opens up a world of possibilities. Automatic lets you keep track of your fuel mileage and vehicle health, expense business trips with a tap, and links your car to the connected devices that power your life. What's that pesky check engine light really mean? Automatic tells you before you have to go to the shop. Automatic can also integrate with your Nest thermostat to know when you're home, and it could even provide the answer to one of life's most common questions. Where did I park my car? It works on nearly every car made after 1996. It takes minutes to install. It connects to your iPhone or your Android phone over Bluetooth. You can get real-time performance data. It uses intelligent coaching to maximize your fuel economy and reduce wear and tear. This is the part that I love, because I have been known to drive in a less than car-friendly manner. I mean, I start too quickly, I stop too fast, I'm kind of hard on the car, and it's easy because I don't know what the repercussions are. I don't have any data, and usually in most aspects of my life, I really want the data, and that's what Automatic provides. It's a platform that integrates with Nest, your mechanic, FreshBooks, and more. You can easily file business expenses. See, this is terrible for me too, because I don't do it just because I don't remember to do it, and when something like Automatic can make it easy, That's when it's worth its weight, literally in gold, or the paper money that we use to replace gold these days. It works with Ifit for even more possibilities to integrate your car with your digital life. Supports Apple Watch and Pebble. Seriously, there's absolutely no reason not to use this. It is smart in every best sense of the word. There's no monthly fees or subscriptions required, and Automatic never sells your data. Here's what I want you to do. Automatic is normally $99.95, but when you use our special code, that code is debug, you'll save 20%. All you have to do is go to automatic.com/debug for more information and to purchase, and use the code debug, save 20% off the regular purchase price. So not only is it a great gadget, it is a great deal. That's automatic.com/debug, and thank you so much for your support.
Was working with clients of that scale, I don't know what to say. Like, obviously, it's different, but you worked with clients at your, I don't know, two, three jobs previously doing the camera stuff. Was this a whole new sort of ballgame for you dealing with this kind of scale?
Interesting. I don't think I ever thought of it that way. Like, there were times when I was like, oh my gosh, we're going to meet with, you know, Saatchi & Saatchi, which is a huge, huge agency, you know? Like, I would feel a little bit like, oh my gosh, we're going to talk. But I think I would get into those meetings, and we were the web people. Like, most agencies at that time, so we're looking at 2004, 2005-ish, and it was between 2004 and 2009, so this timeline of working with Eat Drink and then becoming a partner at Eat Drink. And what was great was we were the experts in web, and agencies didn't really do web stuff at that time. It was new. It was like mobile is to agencies now, right? It was new, and we were the people that were already in the space doing it. We understood, you know, wireframes before that was a buzzword and a thing that people, you know, you'd say wireframes and people were like, what's a wireframe? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like user experience wasn't a thing that web designers were or knew about, like, honestly, like, it just wasn't a thing really then. And so being able to, like, come in and talk with them about how they structure their content, because you're dealing with designers who'd been doing print advertisement for, that was their life. And now mm-hmm. we're talking about interacting with it. So that was a thing that I was very good at talking about, and they never really thought about it as intimidating or whatever, like, oh my gosh, this is a huge agency. Occasionally I would feel a little overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, we're talking to the creative director. I want to be a creative director, and like, this is cool. But you know, I'd be a little nervous. But once you get going and you get talking and you help, you know, you help them solve their problem and the problem that their client's trying to solve, it becomes more fun, I guess. And that was the part that I really enjoyed, was actually capturing the information from the clients and giving it to the guys in the way the guys could understand and mm-hmm. weren't overwhelmed. And but the guys, I don't mean to be, I know there's so much gender sensitivity.
No, I get it.
But I worked with guys, all guys. So I bring it back to my guys and, you know, it was great because, I felt like, you know, I understood what they did. I knew how to make a website. I knew how to, you know, to do graphics and stuff. And sometimes I could just get in and do some stuff real quick and be like this, you know, to communicate better. I think that gave me a great sort of bridge the gap between business and design development, right? I was able to speak both languages mm-hmm. pretty articulately, and that helped me. I think that's where I found my sweet spot.
Did you? So, okay. I was about to ask if you missed the hands-on design aspect, but
Well, you know, I have to tell you, when I made that decision to leave UNLV, where I was a full-time designer, technically.
Just wait, that's University of Nevada in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, UNLV. Okay. Yep, sorry. That's the one. Just... When I made the decision to leave there and join Eat Drink as a production manager or project manager, I was like, I feel like I'm going to the dark side. Like, that's what it felt like to me. Like, it was a little bit grappling with my soul a little bit. I was like, is this the right thing to do? But I knew that my strength was actually in bridging the gap and being a voice for designers. Like, I knew that I could do that. I knew how to help the client. I guess I knew how to sell my shit, right? Like, when I taught design, the two rules of design, sell your shit, kill your baby. You got to be able to let go. And as a mom, I realize that's a sensitive term, but like, you got to be able to kill your work. You got to be able to let go of it. And designers are, and developers too, are very attached to what they birth in terms of their products and the things they make, right? Like, people get very attached to their work. So like, helping designers and developers let go of their work a little bit, like, you're being paid to do a job here. But if you have something that you really want to sell, like, what I found is, if we had a great thing that we wanted to pitch to the client that solved their problem in a different way than the way, you know, they always come to you with a solution. We need you to make this. Yeah. Well, if we could make this, or we could make something else that was, we actually thought was more suitable, I was really damn good at selling that. And that was, you know, again, that was like being that voice, sort of that vocal piece between the two. You know, designers get frustrated and angry, and then they're like, we have to do shit instead. And I was able to shift that a lot for the team. Not always. I mean, sometimes, yeah, you still have to make stuff.
It's still a job, right? Sometimes you gotta bite the bullet, you know, but.
But I found sort of like, that was something that I had some sort of, I guess, natural skill with, is helping the client understand what we needed from them and how to give us what we needed, and mm-hmm. and how to do the same with the team building the stuff.
Well, because that's very true, because so often the you want the client to describe what the problem is
mm-hmm.
rather than describe what they think the solution is.
Exactly.
Because they don't necessarily understand the dynamics or the capabilities or the possibilities that can be deployed in order to solve their problem. They think they know, but they don't necessarily have a full picture of it.
That's really it. And I think, you know, often from a business perspective, even, you know, like we meet as a business, as leaders of businesses or whatever, and we're like, this is the problem we need to solve, and we solve it amongst ourselves, and we think we've got the solution. We're like, deploy, let's get, you know, get some designers and developers in here to make this. But if you actually incorporate
bring in the elves, and it's like, no.
Yeah, if you incorporate them in the problem solving, you get so many more ideas. You get so much better stuff. Like, you get solutions you would have never thought of when it's just, mm-hmm. you know, you and corporate Bob or whatever. Like, you know, you get better solutions when you bring
I'm going to steal corporate Bob from you. I'm going to use that term
a lot. All right, corporate Bob. It's just, it's true. You know it's true, right? Like, yeah. Anyway, so I don't know. I've you know, that's been a thing I've been doing. It's not a new thing for me to be like, hey, we need a designer in the room. In this conversation, like you're identifying a problem that needs to be solved. Let's get, you know, a designer or a developer in the room now so they can tell us like what concerns we should have or what roadblocks we're going to run into or maybe a way to solve this problem that we haven't even come up with yet. So why don't we do that now? And QA people too. Like, you know, I think if we get people involved earlier on, and I think
I agree.
You don't want design by committee by any means, but it's just in the problem solving part, like getting the ideas out. Business leaders can still decide what path is going to be approached. But if you have all those people in the room posing ideas and solutions, you have better choices.
Well, even if they don't speak.
Yeah.
They now have a framework for understanding how the decision was made.
True.
And that's going to help, you know? Maybe you have a QA person, like the lead QA person in the room, and they don't actually contribute anything. But they know why things are being made so that when they go and test a product, they can see it within the framework of like how the decisions were made. And they can go back in their head and be like, well, this doesn't appear to be solving the problem that we discussed in that meeting.
Right.
And while
right.
I didn't actually say anything about it, now I'm looking at this and it's not correct. Like,
yep. It opens the dialogue too, where you can go back and say, yeah, exactly. No, that's you hit the nail on the head with why. It's why, like making sure everybody has clarity of vision and what problem you're trying to solve from the beginning, alignment and buy-in. Like, it's huge. It makes it makes things go so much more smoothly down the road.
And you know, you can't stuff everybody in the room, and that's where communication comes in. But I mean, putting department heads in the room leads on a project is seldom a bad idea if you're.
It's true.
Scoping a project, you know, so.
Totally agree.
Yeah, high five. Woo! So where did you go after that? So Eat Drink.
This Eat was Drink.
2003?
2004 through 2009, Eat Drink. And
When did I meet you?
Oh, boy. Well, I was at Black Pixel from 2011 through 2013. I venture to guess there.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. 2011, I probably met you around then, like end.
Yeah, I think you just joined, and I met you at where everybody meets, which is at the hotel bar.
Yeah, right? It's at some conference, probably WWDC.
It was WWDC, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Actually, that was where I met. It was before I had actually started with Black Pixel. I was still with Zappos. So Eat Drink to Zappos. At Zappos, Zappos
was Zappos? That's an interesting company.
Yeah, so Zappos was interesting. So they were a client of ours. And, you know, in 2008, economy shift, we made the decision to close our company, close Eat Drink. There were three partners at the time, me and two other guys. And we agreed we were ready to kind of go our separate ways anyway. You know, one partner wanted to focus on the advertising stuff. I was so done with like advertising and being what I felt like a mindless robot much of the time for creative directors in that world. There were too many other cool things that we could be doing with our time, I felt. And so I wanted to go in a different direction. And the other partner wanted to go focus on making his animation skills better. So he wanted to move to LA and work on his animation skills. So, you know, we all had different things we wanted to do. We disbanded, shut down the company. It was one of the hardest things.
Bands break up.
Oh, man. It was hard. I ought to tell you, it was hard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was people I loved working with and it sucked, but it was kind of forced by economy a little bit, you know, like it just kind of put us in that position. I was pregnant with my second kid at the time, and it was like this sequence of events, right? Like 2009, February, have second baby. March, close company. April, start new job with Zappos. In May, file for divorce. Like, I mean, it was just this crazy year.
You know what? Sometimes I feel stressed and I'm going to call you.
Please do.
Just be like,
please do. More happened that year too.
Tell me why this is not a big deal. Because that sound, that is, it was like a triple whammy of like.
Do you want me to finish the year out? You want me to tell you?
Oh, no. Really? You've got more? Oh, my God.
So, like, Zappos training was stressful too. So, like, you know, May, file for divorce. June, go through Zappos training. 4 weeks, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Wow.
Think call center. You're training to go to the call center and then 40 hours of answering phones, which if you are not an extrovert, which I do not consider myself to be, I felt like, so I'd been a park ranger at some point. I skipped over that because that was during college.
But like, that's too awesome.
That was way
nobody's going to believe that part.
I protected the bears.
We wrangled cows. We built fences. We dug trenches. We rebuilt a stone cabin. Like, I worked manual labor, right? Like, cleaned toilets, like, picked up garbage, all of these things. But, like, answering phones for 40 hours in a week kicked my ass. I felt like I had the shit kicked out of me every day for those 5 days. I would go home and I was exhausted from answering phones. More exhausting than any physical labor I'd ever done in my life.
Is that the point? Like, they want people who work there to understand regular phone support? Yeah.
Those lines, and to have empathy and to really understand what it's like. Yeah, I think. And I think
whoever made that decision should do it once a month.
They do. They actually.
Oh, they do? Oh, God.
Tony still does. At least that was when I was there. Things have changed a lot since I was there. So yeah, I can't.
It seems rough. Well, but, it's obviously rough for anybody who's doing that job all the time anyway. But.
But those people do a lot. And I do stand behind Zappos customer service. After going through that, like, they stand behind the customer service thing. They've got that down. And I learned a lot from that experience. That's cool.
And again, just to reiterate, don't be a jerk to the person who's trying to
help. Yeah, right? Right?
It doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So, yeah.
So that.
I finished out 2009.
While pregnant
and then
stressed with a whole bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
Fast forward a couple months, and then my divorcing spouse. We moved out in September, and then my also going through a divorce sister and her two boys moved in October with me. And so it's me and my two girls and her two boys. And like, both of us in these crazies. And then my dad, a Vietnam veteran, had my dad throughout my lifetime had, PTSD and several, incidents of needing to be in a care unit, like a psychiatric care unit. So I visited my dad several times in, people are like, oh, my parents are crazy. I'm like, mine too.
I'm laughing.
It's actually like such a good, my dad was an awesome human being, but he struggled. And so, yes, I did visit my dad several times in mental wards, in veteran mental wards. Yeah. So that was a thing. And he had a relapse in November of that year. So he had to go and he had to go through an anger management course. And we joked about it later, but he had to, do some community service time and go back. So that happened in November. That was a little stressful too. And so that kind of closed out the year of 2009 though. So yeah. And
did you get a good Christmas present?
Oh, I don't even remember. I think I went to Disneyland. I do think I went to Disneyland.
Thank God.
Yeah. So it was good. I don't know. Like, it was a stressful year. And I still feel like people who knew me at Zappos probably think I'm batshit crazy. Like, when I think about it, I was probably a basket case. I don't know what I was like to work with, honestly. But I did some great work at Zappos. I had the opportunity of leading the overhaul of the visual look and feel of the Zappos.com website. That was my first project there. And then my second project there was leading the mobile apps, the first mobile apps at Zappos, which very visible
for a company like that. I don't know how much more high profile you can get in terms of design impact.
Exactly. And so they were great. I worked with great teams. I got to do great stuff. And there was a lot of other stuff that happened at Zappos that that made it a very difficult environment for me to work in. But when we were able to just put our heads down and work on great stuff and make great stuff, it was awesome. And when, you know, yeah, there were a lot of things that, yeah, I don't like to dwell on the negative. So I definitely had some negative experiences while there, but the positives that I took away, like, really helped set me on the path to where I'm at now, right? Like, you know, I had run a company before. Yes, the people at my company were the most important thing. And I think I'd like, if there's any underlying theme here, it's people, like, that I enjoy working with people. Like, that's been my strength. And that's the thing that kind of I always end up kind of going back to. And whether it's like kind of being the interface between people and projects and stuff, or whatever, helping people work through stressful times and stuff like that, and helping people be more engaged in their work and happier with their work. That's a thing. That's kind of where the path has taken me. And I know I worked with a couple of folks who hated me at Zappos, and I'm sorry for that. Like, I am. I'm really sorry for that.
Well,
I can't click to everyone.
Stuff happens, and, you know, people are different parts in their life, and you get off on the wrong foot every now and then, and things don't work out. Doesn't mean they're bad people, you know.
So. It's true. It's true. And I try to keep the people and the, you know, thing separate, you know, it's like, you keep the people and the thing separate and it works out. I don't know. So, yeah.
So then you went to Black Pixel.
So I was actually, we had done a one week sprint with Black Pixel. So we'd done our iPad app. We started with iPad first, 2010. iPad just came out. Mm-hmm. We did the iPad for Zappos in 8 weeks. It was 6 weeks, and then we beginning to end, we had never touched an iPad, and we had it done in 8 weeks. Amazing team. And then we had this fantastic conversation with, I think, Mark Kawano, UX analyst at the time. And he was like, he was like, really great job. Here are a couple notes. Like, we had submitted it, but he was like, this is one of the better shopping apps we've seen come through here. Gilt was a really great one. And, you know, we had done a really good job with, you know, our coding was solid. Like, we seriously, to this day, two of the best programmers I'd ever worked with. And I've worked with some great folks. You guys know that. Those two dudes.
You want to name them?
You can name them. Rick Harrison and Ray Morgan.
There you go.
Amazing dudes. And design, Ken Finney. You know, like, these guys were our team. Oh my gosh. And we had a QA guy, Sal, and we had a production or a project manager, Ian, and myself, just kind of like, okay, here's the vision. Here's what we're going to do. Then we banged that out in 8 weeks and our brains were fried. And then we were like, okay, it's time to do the iPhone app. And we asked Mark on the call, we were like, can you help us? And he said, no, I can't do that. But here are a list of companies that you guys can talk to. And among those, we talked to a few.
He was still at Apple at the time, right?
He was still at Apple at the time. Yeah, 2000.
He was evangelist right there.
User experience evangelist,
UX evangelist, 2000. Yeah,
he's at Storyboard right now.
Storefront.
Yeah. Storefront. Storyboard.
Sorry, Mark.
Storehouse? No, wait a minute. Storehouse.
Storehouse.
Yes.
But it is.
Yeah. Well, he's getting extra attention, but it's all wrong. So hopefully that evens out.
It is actually Storehouse.
Yes.
Storehouse. Mark Kawano, Storehouse. But yeah, that's how we met Black Pixel. We did a 1 week brainstorming engagement. Chris Clark was the design guy, or the guy that we worked with that week. He helped us brainstorm some stuff that was, you know, we had done something very specific to the iPad. We knew we needed to design for the device, not just make what we did for the iPad. Like, everybody was making their iPhone app bigger for the iPad. We were like, no, I knew enough that wasn't the right approach. And our
Chris
team.
Good too. I haven't worked directly with him, but he's
Clarko.
I've had a lot of conversations with him. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. So.
Very cool. And just great ideas. We got to work with them. So that made my introduction to Black Pixel. And then, you know, we Zappos, our little mobile team, went out to WWDC, my first WWDC, 2011. So I had never heard of WWDC before that. I'm not like a super, you know, mobile app, Mac, Apple nerd, honestly. Like,
that
could
be when I met you, actually. I think
that's probably when it was. And you know, and I ran into Pasco out there, and to Daniel Pasco and George, and you know, I was like, heads up, like, this is my last month at Zappos. I gave notice, I'm out of here. And they were like, let's talk when you're done. Let's talk. And we did. You know, I'd planned to go back to being independent. I'd been, you know, I'd as an owner of Eat Drink, and I'd been independent. I'd done a lot of freelance in my time. I was like, I can do this. So I left Zappos with a couple contracts to do mobile UX design for some startups out in San Francisco. I had a couple great things.
Was that scary?
Well, it's always scary, especially
scary for me.
Yeah,
but I have no children.
Yeah, and I was like a freshly like divorced single mom, basically. Yeah.
I mean, so you kick ass, but I mean, at the same time.
Well, here's the thing, like
bills are bills. So,
what I realized when I was at Zappos is that like after almost 2 years, I think I made it just past 2 years, right? And about a year and a half in, I would say I stayed maybe 6 months too long, if I'm going to be totally honest. I was starting to realize like it's almost an hour commute for me. It was at the time. They've moved locations since then. But, you know, like I was leaving my house around 7:30. I had a nanny who I found like some, you know, amazing 19-year-old girl that just needed work, basically, right? Mm. And she was great with the kids. She was from Idaho. She just needed work. So I was able to get a great deal, you know, for, yeah. So I'll just, yeah, finances aside. She was with me for, yeah, almost that whole time at Zappos. And then she needed to move back to Idaho for her own personal reasons and stuff. And about that time, like, I was ready to leave Zappos. So I don't know. Like, I guess, like, I was realizing, though, I was leaving at 7:30 in the morning and getting back at about 7:30 at night. And my kids are little. I mean, I had a brand new, you know, fresh baby.
Yeah. And, just built, like, right off the assembly line. Right
off, fresh out of the factory. So, yeah, she she was fresh. And, like, I didn't see them much. You know, I saw them enough to wake up and have breakfast and then put him to bed. Like, that sucked. And I was like, I don't want this to be my life. And I don't know, like, it took me, yeah, it was scary to answer your question. Yeah, it was scary. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe it's the influence of my dad all my life. Like, he never stayed in a job he didn't enjoy ever. Like, if it, you know, he had a family and I had to ask him literally 2 weeks before he passed away. I didn't know that he was going to pass away, of course. But like 2 weeks before he passed away, I was like, well, how did you do that? Like, how did you always leave and know that everything was going to be OK? He's like, well, I didn't. I just didn't. You know, if we had to live in a tent, whatever, like, who cares? We'd be all right. We'd figure it out. I was like, oh, so like basically you just have to you have to not devalue money. I don't mean devalue money, but like, you have to be willing to give up your stuff, right? Like the stuff you own is that important to you, then it's going to own you. And I realized like with that statement of my dad, it was just like, you have to be willing to let everything go.
So Buddhist. It's,
and, you know, and I really thought about it before I left. Yeah, right. Where I thought about it when I left Zappos, I was like, look, what's the worst thing that happens is like I lose my house. That would suck. But I don't believe that I'm going to let that happen. Right. I'm going to work my ass off. And if I have to go get a job at McDonald's, like, I'll figure it out. Right. But that didn't happen. Like, I didn't lose work. I kept work. Black Pixel ended up making an offer. First, I said no. And then we kept talking. And then they made an offer that, yeah, I couldn't say
that
no.
You couldn't refuse.
Yeah. Like, I couldn't.
They kidnap your children. And you're like,
they're like what would it? Tell us. What, yeah. And so I spent a week thinking about it and I sent them an email like with my list of like, this is what it would take. And like within 15 minutes, they were like, done. When can you start? And I had no reason to say no. And I could work from home, which was really the most important thing to me. And so I was like, why not? And they're a great company. You know, they were, it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I got to work with great people on great stuff. And, you know, like, and I did that until it wasn't a right fit for me anymore. And then I left. And so I was there for almost 2 years. It seems to be about my lifespan of workplaces. And it's time to grow.
You're
and
noticing a pattern direction. That you do about 2 to 3 years. Yeah. And then you move to a place that you've been working with.
Yeah, right? Like, that does seem to happen, doesn't it? Holy cow, I didn't even make that connection. But yeah, it's like people.
I just blew your mind. Here's your life. It's sprung wide open.
Yeah. I don't feel like I've ever been poached either. Like, it's always been just like a natural next step sort of thing.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to make it sound like this thing. But it's like just get excited about working with
spaces.
You get excited working about something and you go.
Yeah. And, you know, and it has a lot to do with, you know, moving, like, you know, I don't know. I always imagine like swinging vines, like Tarzan, like it's just wherever the one that makes the most sense to grab onto, like that aligns with where I feel like I'm going in my life. Like, I feel like I know where I'm going, even though I don't articulate it well. I know what I want, where I want to go. And I suck at communicating that. As great at communication as I claim to be, I really suck at communicating my own value and skill set sometimes. And I'm learning, and I'm getting a little better at it over time. And you know, as I kind of weed out what's not right, I'm like, nope, that's not it. That's not it. I try a lot of stuff over and over, different things. You know, I started tiny challenges through doing stuff like that every month, a different challenge and experimenting and stuff like that. And that to me is, oh my gosh, I just looked at the clock and I realized how much I've been talking. And it's, you guys,
well, this is, that's the show. This is the whole point.
This is the Jamie hour and a half.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. All right. This is what people pay no money for. It's not a problem.
anyway. All right. So, experimenting. And then, you know, when I started working with Martian Craft, like I had been doing coaching for, I left Black Pixel, wasn't really sure what I was going to do, but I did have a client lined up.
This is what you're doing when I saw you in Yosemite, right?
Yeah, coaching, right?
Yeah. I think you'd left Black Pixel at that point. You were doing coaching stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I left Black Pixel in, April 2013.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think that lines up, yeah.
Yep, and I think Yosemite was last year, 2015. So, yeah, I'd been out a couple years. Yeah. And I'm going to Yosemite again this year. Are you guys going?
I can't. I think I have another commitment.
I
would love to go though. I had a blast, and those guys are great.
I'll just put this out there that scheduling conferences in March or September, sometimes October, is really hard.
I'm sure.
I used to do that, and
I know I had to go from a lineup. I literally went to a lineup to get an iPhone, and then straight to the first Singleton, and then wrote my review while watching all the sessions.
The one thing I do love about Singleton is that we got a bunch of like prominent American nerds in Canada where they couldn't get their iPhones.
It was so great
for that, because it was always the weekend that the iPhone actually came out.
Oh, funny.
Just accidentally. And they were always bitter.
I love it.
I kind of like it. It's my little prank on the United States.
Hi, Marco.
Oh, I love it.
So you were doing coaching for a while.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean or entail, I should say?
Yeah. So basically, I did kind of a range of stuff, but it was helping people work through different problems. So it's basically kind of a lot of UX work, right? Like UX, you frame a problem and you help the person figure out how to solve the problem. The difference between coaching and consulting, I would say, is with consulting, I do the work hands-on. With coaching, you do the work hands-on, and I guide you through it. We check in. So it's much less hands-on for me, but I have the skills and the background to guide you and to keep you on the right course for the problem you're trying to solve. So with corporate clients, often it was anything from evaluating their sales process and rewriting it for them, giving them feedback on how it was going, giving them feedback on how they could do management things better to keep their employees more engaged. I did a lot of employee engagement stuff because I live on the philosophy of like we put so much emphasis now on the end user that sometimes we forget about the teams that need to be happy. And I believe, you know, like happy cows make great milk or cheese or whatever that California ad is. But like not to compare people with cows, but like, but our people need to be happy too. And I believe when they're happy and they're engaged, they make better work. They have better ideas. They own what they make. And that ownership is important in the products we make, especially if we want them to engage the end user. Like, I believe that, you know, we have to be thinking about both sides of the equation here. The product is I always say it's the connective tissue between these human beings, right? And we have to be thinking about both sides as human beings, not the machine that makes the product for the human beings. And I feel like we've moved in that direction a lot, and it scares me, honestly. We have human beings making products for human beings, and we need to remember that. And so helping C-level executives and managers of designers and developers, helping them, I guess, like remember the humanity in a lot and keep their employees engaged, that has been my focus for the last 3 years. So yeah, Yeah, and then processes on finance, everything from finances to sales to, yeah, I don't know. I tend to be pretty good financially. I don't have a degree. My mom was an accountant, though, and my dad owned his own businesses throughout my life. And, you know, I grew up helping sort receipts and do accounting and all kinds of stuff. So I'm pretty responsible, I guess, like fiscally sound that way. So I can bring a lot to the table for small businesses especially.
So you're running for president is what you're trying to say? You're gonna
take over the world. I really just want to be Oprah. Like, that's my dream. I want to be like Oprah.
I like that you dream small.
Right? Like, go big or go home, guy. What are you dreaming about?
Being Oprah. I mean, come on.
Being on the would be one. That would be nice. That baseline competence would be good. So you're joining Martian Craft.
Yeah, so that just happened. Yeah.
Yeah. What, like a week ago? Not even.
Yeah, like a week. I think I don't even remember the date, to be honest. It all kind of blurs. I've been with them.
You know, so.
Exactly. So I've been working with Martian Craft, has been a client of mine since, I don't know, May of last year, I think. So almost a year. And they have been phenomenal. Like, I can't say enough good things. Like, they have been phenomenal. So, yeah, I don't know. Every company has their ups and downs. They've been transparent. They've been easy to work with. You know, that's not to say we get along and agree on everything. Not at all. But, like, having a healthy dialogue through things, like, these guys get it. These guys get it. And I love that.
Yeah, I've worked with them, too, in there. And I know many of them as friends. Very good guys. What is the role that you're going to be taking on? It's... cool. Chief operating officer.
I just make a lot of noise. Woo.
Cool.
Yeah, chief operations officer or operating officer.
What's when you wake up in the morning and you open up the laptop, what happens?
Was it because chief getting shit done officer didn't look good on the card?
That's right. That's right. You know, and that's really, you know, there's a lot of overlap in what, you know, I'm there to support a lot of Kyle's vision and stuff with running the company. And I'm there, you know, we have a new chief marketing officer, Ben Brooks, who will be replacing Rob. And Rob's been awesome, I got to tell you. And Rob, man, dude wore a lot of hats, right? Like,
yeah.
Wore a lot of hats. And
Rob,
so...
I mean, Kyle and Ben are both awesome, but, you know, I've known Rob like a long time, since before Martian Craft. He's a smart cookie and he's a hardworking fella.
May or may not be Captain America, he won't say.
Exactly. So big shoes to fill, right? Like, and, you know, and we're splitting his role up, and there's, you know, there's me doing operation stuff. I'm going to be focusing on the team, health, well-being, morale. I'm going to be focusing on sales a lot and vision and strategy for how to grow the company along with Kyle. I'm going to be supporting Ben's efforts on marketing as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I'll be out there on the conference circuit already doing that. So
are you gonna start wearing suspenders?
Maybe. We'll see.
You gotta go with the branding, you know?
That's right. Martian Craft suspenders. maybe I will. Oh, I love it. No, that's, and then Nick, our creative director, is going to be, you know, really a lot more face forward on the branding side of things. So, and he's amazing, amazing. He wrote this amazing article on the San Francisco typeface. I don't know if you guys caught it.
Yeah,
but
yeah, absolutely.
It's great. Yeah,
really good. 2-part.
That did the rounds because, I mean, I think he. I don't know if it. I mean, we should put that in the show notes. But I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody's read it by now because it was a terrific piece. So
yeah, it got fireballed too, which was great.
Yeah. I think everybody knows, but I mean, let's explain what Martian Craft is. You have your own set of internal apps.
Yep.
Not internal apps, but apps that you develop and then sell directly. But you do a lot of client work too.
Yeah. So there's a lot of consulting. I would say design and development. So iOS and Android, native app, and Mac desktop. I feel like I should have this spiel way better. Way better. It's so crystallized. It's
okay. You're new on the job. I don't even know.
A thousand strands of awesome in your pocket.
Oh man, that's it.
It's okay. Yeah. You can practice on that. It's fine.
No, that's it though. It's the you know, native apps, development, design, and training. We train people too, and that's something I don't think folks realize is as on the forefront, but we'll change that soon and make sure there's a place people can go and easily access our training for folks, because we have a lot of really smart people on this team, great trainers on our training team. And yeah.
I did not know that. And I'm in the Martian Craft Slack room.
See, who knew, right? It's coming. Give me a minute.
that's a terrific idea.
Yeah, well, they've been doing it, you know. It's just
I didn't know it was like a thing. They're,
exactly. Like, yeah. So we should probably let the world know that. So yeah, training is a thing, and they're very good at it. And then, you know, yeah, the staff aug and will help people build a product from beginning to end as well. So it's end-to-end development and design.
Turnkey solutions for leveraging your synergies.
So straight out of the bullshit generator.
Yeah.
Don't stick marketing for a long time.
Don't listen to Renee.
Suspender that stuff up. We'll suspend it up right.
So what's the kind of, I don't know if you can talk about it, but what's the breakdown in terms of development for the apps that you are, you know, the apps that you sell directly and the apps that, and the training and all of that that you do for clients?
Ooh, you know what? I don't think
it's like
I'm
the apps the tip of the iceberg.
So, you know, client services are basically the biggest percentage. Right. But as far as the other two categories there, I'm not ready.
Sorry, I don't mean to make you feel uncomfortable or anything. I'm just trying to, like, I want to sketch out what the company looks like.
I'll answer what I can answer. But yeah, you can ask anything. It's a, you know, but yeah, I can't fully answer that right now. Yeah. But when
I will say this. The company is a bit of a powerhouse, and what you see is not necessarily the bulk of the effort and the impact that you guys have on the industry.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of our first areas of focus, is to really amplify the voices within Martian Craft, because those people are amazing. And like, the people make the company, and that speaks true to everything I'm about as far as like, help, you know, the work I've done helping companies and stuff like that. It's about the people, right? Like the people first. And so amplifying the voices of our team and their skills and what they bring to the table and why we value them so much. I think when the world sees the people we've got, when we can highlight them better, they'll be as aware as we are. And I think that's a great, you know, way to move forward. And then, you know, yeah, I don't know. We'll take it from there. But that's sort of the initial starting point for sure.
That's great. Well, I have the utmost confidence in Martian Craft, and I'm really glad that you've taken this role. There's a lot of really smart people there, and you being involved just makes me feel better about it.
Awesome. That's so cool to hear. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I got paid. I got paid to say that.
Putting some Jamie Craft in the market, Martian Craft.
Man.
Jamie, is there anything that you'd like to cover? Anything that we missed?
Oh my gosh, well, we pretty much covered my entire life story. So, you know, sans childhood. We'll leave that out for now. That can be a part two.
Yeah, come back. We'll
do it. We didn't even touch on Disney, which feels like a major part of your existence.
Oh my gosh, I love Disney. Yeah, we can talk about Disney. Let's do a part two sometime, and we'll talk about
Mantia.
Disney.
We'll get Mantia and you on, and we'll do
heck yeah. Yeah, I would love it. Yeah. Do love Disney.
I've never been to Disney.
What? I'll be there this weekend. You should come.
Is Martian? Can you confirm or deny Martian Craft is moving to Disney?
I cannot confirm nor deny Martian Craft is moving to Disney.
Jamie, thank you. It's been lovely. I don't want to take up any more of your time.
No, thank you.
You said it like a pro. You said it right at top. But where do people find you on Twitter and in the real world?
At Jamie is my Twitter handle. It's spelled Jaimee twice.
Nice. And at Disney every other weekend.
That's right. You can find me at one of the Disneys.
Like you do not promote your own company. You are also the chief operations officer at Martian Craft.
Martian Craft.
A lot of great stuff. So
always
check
find
them out.
Me. That's right. Jamie with that crafty spelling at martiancraft.com as well. So, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.